across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Michael DeMoss. Mike is an Army veteran. He's got an interesting business background, and that's what we're really going to talk to him about. Michael, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, it really all starts with a ROTC scholarship in the early 80s, maybe late 79, at Western Maryland College. How did a nice kid like you get pulled into a ROTC scholarship, and where did that take you?
Yeah, it's an interesting part of my story. So my freshman year of college, my parents paid for my first year. I didn't do very well. And at the end of the year, they said, good luck, buddy. You're on your own. And one of my best friends had an ROTC scholarship. And so I went to the application, filled it out, did the physical training thing, and somehow they let me in.
Well, you know, it's one of those things I say to a lot of people who I end up talking to, who say, well, you know, college is so expensive, I can't find a way to go. To which I say, you know, I'm calling BS on that, because there is always a way to go if you want it bad enough, and including, you know, going out and getting an ROTC scholarship. So after graduating with your bachelor's degree in chemistry, what did the United States Army decide you should do?
Well, I was a chemistry major in college, which only reason I chose that is because it was the shortest matriculation line when I was signing up for classes.
I'm not buying that, because organic chemistry was a killer.
Oh, it was horrible. So, you know, when I had my selection criteria, I would put aviation pilot first, you know, ranger infantry second, and chemical corps third. And of course, they gave me chemical corps. So I was a chemical officer right out of the gate. One of the most unpopular guys on any Army post.
Absolutely. You went to the U.S. Army Chemical School. You graduated from there, as well as Airborne School. You got to be a nuclear, chemical, and biological staff officer. All of those kind of good things, right? Where were you posted?
I spent most of my time at Fort Lewis, Washington, which was a really, really good place to be. It was beautiful out there. The people were cool. The post was fun. And we got a lot of like new equipment to test out there. So early in the Humvees, early in TAC fire for artillery, lots of cool testing. And I really enjoyed Fort Lewis. It was a fun post.
And this, what was the time frame here, Mike?
So I graduated from college in 85, and I was in Fort Lewis the tail end of 86, and I spent the rest of my tour of duty there. and I actually ETS in January of 90. And then I think the first Gulf War started within the next, I don't know, 6 to 12 months after that.
Yeah. Well, you got to miss some of that fun, and what we've had our guys in and gals in for the last 20 years is now over, thankfully, as well. But a lot of turmoil in the world. We still need good men and women out there protecting our freedoms. So you did what a lot of guys did, you know, got 5.5 years in or something and said, okay, it's now time to do something else. What was the something else?
Well, it's interesting. I just did not like people telling me what to do. Which was
what a surprise. What a surprise.
I really enjoyed some parts of the military, but the hardest part for me was just taking orders all the time, especially when I couldn't make sense of them in my own head. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go be a sales guy where I can, you know, drive my own world. And came to find out that I was just in another job where somebody was telling me what to do.
There's always a sales manager, isn't there? Increasing your quota and telling you to do more.
Yes, yes. And so my first sales job, it was right when R-12 was being phased out and replaced by R-22. And my company had something like, I don't know, 12,000 tons of this stuff in a yard. And they said, hey, we're going to have a special commission program. Whoever can sell this, you know, you'll get $50 for every ton you sell or whatever. And I had only been in the job 6 months, and I sold the whole entire yard to one customer. And somehow that made me sales manager material. So that's how I got to be a sales manager, you know, just because I had one, you know, one lucky day, I guess.
And a lot of guys find that what they get out and do originally right after transitioning maybe isn't what they end up doing for their career. And you did about 8 years in the sales and general manager area in the same kind of thing. Two companies that I think are probably competitors, direct competitors of each other.
Yeah.
When you got through that period, what was the itch? What were you like, I just got to move to something else, and talk about that transition, because a lot of veterans go through multiple career transitions.
Well, it's twofold. One part of it was I still had people telling me what to do, but I think the second part of it was I felt like no matter what kind of job I had, I was never going to really make money. And because I had been in sales and sales management and general management, I could look at a P&L and I could see how much money I was making for the company. And then what little tiny bit of that was coming to me. And I just felt like I've got to do something on my own. And I just was looking for opportunities. And one of my friends from high school called me up one day and said, hey, I met these guys, they have a company for sale, you know, do you want to go in with me and buy it? And we knew nothing about it. We knew it was a mailing company, right? Direct mail. And we went to a big trade show, and there was all these machines and all these people and all this hype. And we got really excited, and we said, okay, we're going to buy this thing. And so it's nuts. I took a $50,000 second mortgage on my house. And then I got 10 credit cards for $5,000 each, all on the same day, cash advance. And that's how I got together $100,000 to buy my part of the company.
Now, what year would this have been, Mike?
This was 1998.
And risk-taking certainly is something that most guys in the military live with. And so was this financial risk something that you really agonized over, or what, did you just view this as this is the next, you know, thing I got to take a risk on and somehow I'll make it all work?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, we're moving really fast, but I had started a couple of small companies along the way that either made a little bit of money and then I ran out of energy and stopped, or the product lived out its life cycle. So I had seen the ability to make a little bit of money fast. And I just felt like I needed out, and I was willing to take a risk. And I mean, I had a piece of paper that justified financially why I was doing this, but it was at that time for me a very risky move, but I just was confident that we would figure it out. And you know, we almost went broke three times over 3 years. Like, it wasn't easy, but we would always think about, this is what we thought we were going to do. It's not exactly working right. How can we pivot to something that's slightly different, that's more appealing to the customers? And we just adapted until we found the right kind of groove, and then really worked that angle the best we could. And I mean, if I'm giving advice to anybody, if you have an idea and it's not working, just pivot a little bit to make it work. Don't like hang your hat on that one thing that's not working.
Yeah, and really look at what your customer's saying and doing and say, oh, well, I don't do that exactly right now, but I could shift a little bit and do it. And be, you kind of shifted more to marketing and communication. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so in both of the companies that I worked for after the military, and then my own company, we were hiring advertising agencies to help us grow our business. And my overall experience, while we had some good experiences, our overall experiences with the advertising agencies, they charged a lot of money, there was a lot of fluff, and they weren't really helping our business. And I felt like they were great for these big, you know, Procter and Gamble or somebody like that, but a small or mid-sized business needed someone who really understood both the P&L and the marketing, and would come in and kind of sit at the table as their fractional CMO, is the best way I can describe it. And I found that's the niche that we have landed in, where we're trying to help small to mid-sized business owners grow their business, not wasting their money on things that don't work, and then helping drive a return in their business. That's where I find my passion, is helping other entrepreneurs grow their business. Like, that's where I get the juice from, watching that happen and being successful doing that.
Well, and you had worked for some big, you know, Fortune 100 companies and saw what they could do, but what was really missing was for that small business. You know, they don't have a whole department of people sitting around working on marketing, although they need help, and they know they need help in this area. And quite frankly, you're doing this at a time when the marketplace is really changing, right? It's going from publication to internet, if you will. So there was a big transition going on that it was difficult, and still going on, difficult for the small business guy to get a grasp of, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very complicated these days, and it's omni-channel. So you can't just do direct mail, or you can't just do TV. You have to be in a lot of places, and there's just so many companies that are trying to sell a silver bullet. Like, hey, if you just do this one thing, it's going to work. And it's really not true, but that's what they sell, so that's what they're promoting. And we're promoting marketing as, you know, more holistically. And it's one thing I wanted to say about the big companies. They can get away with things that small companies can't, because they have a lot of revenue, they have investors. You know, I remember this one company I worked for, I won't say the name, but they reorganized once a year over 5 years. New president, new values, new mission. And the fifth year, we reorganized back to the way it was the first year that I went there. And that was like my mind just blew up in my head, because I was like, small companies can't afford to go through all this and change the signs and spend all this money. They just need to grow their business and focus on the key things that are going to help do that. And that's part of what got me out of there. I was like, I just can't do this anymore.
Well, that's right. A small business can't afford those kind of mistakes. It can't blow money on an advertising campaign that doesn't work, because it doesn't have really deep pockets. It's got to have some return on investment. And your company, Victory 360, tell us what its sweet spot is.
So it's funny, I actually own two companies. So Victory 360 is direct response marketing for home services businesses. So plumbers, HVAC, insurance, roofing, siding, windows, doors. So what we're doing is we're analyzing the persona of their best customers, their income value, where they live, how they vote politically, and we are helping them message those consumers in a way that they're most responsive to. And we're touching them with direct mail, email, display campaigns, social campaigns, and we're driving really, really good response rates. So like, I have a plumbing company, our lead costs to them, so their cost per lead, when you factor in all the money that they spend, is about $60 for somebody to call them to place an order. And that's very, very reasonable and very predictable.
And they don't even get in the van and drive to your house without a mobilization or service charge of probably over $100. So it's all right, yeah, all I mean, equals average, out right there before they've done a thing.
Yeah, their average, I mean, this is how we back into what we're going to do for a client. But if their average ticket is $350 and the lifetime value of a client is $1,500, then they can surely spend $60 to get them in the door.
Well, and that's the kind of math and results that business owners can understand. It's, you know, sort of direct. Now, you said you have a second company. Tell us about that as well.
Yeah, so the C360 agency is more of the full-service advertising agency that uses the fractional CMO as the kind of the pivot point for the client. So when we were talking earlier, that's the company I was talking about. I go in, I meet with the owners, we figure out what their financial goals are, and then I build a marketing plan for them, and then I bring in the subject matter experts to execute against that plan.
Well, it's hard to cut through all the noise. You know, we all get bombarded with advertising, with emails, with spam filters that get more sophisticated, trying to protect us. So that's got to be part of the strategy, isn't it? Like, how do we cut through the noise and get your message heard?
Yes, yes. And that does take some budget, right? So one of the things that we run into is people that have big dreams about how they want to grow their business, but they don't have any marketing budget. And that in today's world, that's just not possible, right? So you've got to have a budget, and then you've got to do it over the long term. So a good example would be, I get calls all the time. A client says, hey, I want to get on TV next month. And I'm like, do you have the budget to be on the TV every month for 12 months? Oh, no, I don't want to do that. Okay, well, then you don't want to get on TV, because 1 month is just going to waste your money. Let's take the budget that you have. Let's figure out where your customers are looking for your service, and then let's just go there, right? So where do people look for whatever your service is, and what do they look like? What do they care about? And let's go only there and start there. So we have a cannabis farm in Michigan that's a client of ours. I think he was on your show.
In fact, I'm not going to mention his name, but he was.
And so, you know, he has to sell to the retailers. But what he needed was to build a brand. So where can you build a brand for cannabis? Really, it's social media, right? And by showing the people that are on the farm, the quality of the things that you're growing, the statistics on the quality of the product that you're selling to the retailers, building a brand, it was almost all social media. And now he's recognized in 10 states, and people think he's, you know, a big company. And it's all about picking that where your customers are. And that's where we found his customers.
Well, it's interesting, because when I talked to him, I said, man, you got a great website here. And, you know, he just sort of smiled. But it's all part of that, isn't it? Having the right image, promoting the right image, getting people to take a look at you. All of that helps build the brand, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you interview that person, I mean, he knew very early on that his business was all about the people, like taking farmers and making farming cool again. And so that's what you build the brand around, is that value, that the CEO's vision. But you have to say it in a way that common people can connect with. And yeah, we've done that.
Well, here's a question I think probably a lot of small business, veteran-owned small businesses out there are thinking, man, I don't know if I got the budget for this. What as an expert like you, what percentage of revenue should a small business, what range should it be thinking about putting into its marketing budget?
It's a hard question, because it's somewhat industry specific, but I would say generally speaking, it's something like 3-10% of your revenue budget has to be, 3% of whatever your revenue is needs to be in in marketing. And I think most small companies need to be spending something like $5,000 to $10,000 a month between the professional services of the people that they're working with and the paid application of those things, whether it's digital ads or radio, TV, email deployment, whatever it is. But it's, you know, and if you don't, like, we work with a lot of nonprofits that get grants, and they'll get like a $50 million grant over 5 years to build a really cool service, like, you know, people that are getting out of prison to get them reconnected, or what they, so they have these big budgets, and then they come to us and say, well, we need help building our program. I say, well, how much is in the budget for that $50 million project? Oh, we didn't put any marketing money in there. Right. Like, duh. Like,
right. If they don't find it, it doesn't do any good. It's the light right under the bushel basket.
So that's starting to change. And you do see nonprofits advertising. They're really good causes, but no one knows about them. Right. So they've got to have a marketing budget. And that's
as you've moved through your business career and become this, you know, CEO of multiple businesses with working with a lot of other business owners, do you feel that some of that, some of those things that you learned, whether it was in ROTC or your 5 years in the Army, do some of those things still ripple forward as points of reference for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. Sometimes when I do a lot of one-on-one calls with the CEOs of the companies that we represent, and a lot of times on the call they'll say, I feel like I was just in a therapy session. because I'm talking about what I remember about my first job as a second lieutenant. It was my first exposure to what's been called imposter syndrome. You know, I'm like college graduate, 6 months of officer training, 3 months of airborne school, boom, you're in charge. And I mean, I really knew that I didn't know. And just being able to admit that and then find ways to learn and get support was really, really important. And I feel like just because somebody has the title of a CEO, everyone expects them to already know everything. And I don't think most of us do, but we have support networks to help us work through some of the more challenging issues. And I would say I've always, every time I've changed jobs or come up with a new idea, I've always had that little bit of insecurity. But having good mentors and good people around me to talk through things has been the thing that's kind of helped me get over the hump. And just saying, hey, you're not the only one who feels like that is a great place to start.
Yeah, that we can all learn from each other, and that's what we try to do here on Veterans Radio. And we're talking to business owner, Army veteran, entrepreneur, Michael DeMoss. Michael's, you've got your own podcast, I believe, that you've just gotten started, called Finding Your Grit. That harkens back to your Army days.
Yeah, this follows on to what I was just saying. I want to find a way to have business owners tell stories about what happened in their career so that young entrepreneurs can hear how they navigated that versus someone giving them advice or telling them what to do. Because when someone would tell me, hey, Mike, you have this problem, here's what you should do, I had a hard time accepting that and integrating it. But when I would see a business owner talk about, he went through this hard time, here's the things he thought about, here's the decisions he made, and here was the outcome, I can choose what I want to learn from their experience and then integrate that into my company. And that's what Finding Your Grit is all about. I'm trying to find business leaders who are willing to get really personal about experiences they've had and how they overcame them so that young entrepreneurs can learn from them.
Well, it's a great, I think, opportunity to pass on to other entrepreneurs, other veterans, business owners, of sort of things that, you know, you don't have to learn everything the hard way. If somebody else already learned it the hard way, maybe you could just take that advice if you can internalize it. But yeah, Mike, let's remember, Mike, you started with, I don't take direction from other people very well.
Right. That's my whole point. And I think there's like this internal struggle that a lot of people don't even admit that they don't like being told what to do. I mean, there's a whole population of people that are fine being given direction and following direction, whatever. But there are people that are in seats getting told what to do that absolutely hate it. And they feel like there's something wrong with them. And there's not. There's just, there's different kinds of people. And I learn much better kind of a little bit the hard way and a little bit learning from other people's experiences versus people telling me what to do. My parents would reinforce that for sure.
Well, we're talking to somebody who's earned his chops in the marketing area. Michael, if folks want to find you, how do they do that?
Easiest way is www.c-360.agency, and there's a contact form on the webpage.
Well, we appreciate you taking a little time today to talk to Veterans Radio about your experiences in the Army, how you got there, what you learned there, and more importantly, your progress through the business world, because I think we all learn a little something when, we find maybe it was pretty hard for somebody else. They almost went bankrupt a few times. But just hang in there, you be persistent, and you keep learning and moving forward, don't you?
Yep, and I would also put the offer out there that if there are any young veteran entrepreneurs who want to just share their idea, talk about some experiences they're having, and hear my experiences, I'm happy to connect. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Again, thank you for your time with Veterans Radio today.
Thank you so much.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.